Basket Basket. Richie, would you briefly review your weight training, weightlifting program? Okay, that's a good question, yes. Because I think it's a threefold disease, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And my physical recovery, exercise has been real important. I came into the program knowing that. When I went to Duke University, when I was 410 pounds, they had me walking half a mile to breakfast, half a mile back from dinner, no matter what. And I gradually worked my way up to walking longer distances at faster paces. So when I got into OA and I started abstaining, from day one, I was walking 3 to 5 miles a day at a 15-minute a mile rate. And it was a little slower and a little less miles at the beginning, but that's what I got into a groove at. And even after losing my weight, I continued doing that for a few years. And then I went into, that's when I lost my house that I spoke about previously. So I had lived in the San Fernando Valley, and my daughter went to Grant High School and Valley College, which was exactly a mile from my house. I mean, I went to extremes. I bought a pedometer, which you put on, and when you walk, it measures your miles and that. So it was exactly a mile from my house. The track was a one-mile track around. So I walked to the track three times around and back home. And I did that every day for a few years. And I wore a Walkman. No, that was before Walkmans. It was like I wore one of those radio things, right? And it was great because people, this is true, more than one person would stop their car over a period of years and come up to me and said, you know, I go to work every day the same way. And every day I see you walking the track. And every day it looks like you're getting thinner, you know. And all the kids that were in Stacy's class, I played when she was in her senior year in high school. I was still fat, and I played in a celebrity basketball game against the teachers of the school, the faculty. So we played a benefit game. So I was one of the few people that are in my daughter's yearbook. My picture was in there. So everyone in the school knew me, and the kids started coming up to me and going, what's going on? Like, you seem like you're so different. You're losing so much weight, you know. So I would get to share my recovery with them. So that's what I did. And then I lost my house and I moved to an apartment in West L.A. So in God's infinite wisdom, during that period of time, the kids, my daughter was a cheerleader. And I had this big Hollywood house with a pool and a jacuzzi. And we used to have big pool parties for the whole football team. So I got to know them. In fact, one of them is kid Mitch Gaylord, who was an Olympic gymnastic champion. He was one of the kids who won the gold medal. And he used to come over to my house all the time. And so I've got to know these kids. And they planted a seed with me that their coach had them firming up on Nautilus machines, on these Nautilus machines. So that was like, say, 3 years before I moved. Well, when I moved, I was looking for a new place to walk 5 miles. And I live about a mile from the beach. So I figured going to the beach, walking 3 miles along the beach and a mile back would be fine, except it's a very commercial neighborhood. And everyone's going to work. It's too much traffic. And it's just not conducive to walking without being, you know, interrupted or having to wait for lights and dodge people in cars. So I was still searching for this path when I walked right into, literally, a Nautilus and Aerobics Plus gymnasium about 2 blocks from my house. And I went in out of curiosity, and there was this young, beautiful girl behind the counter. So it took me about 3 minutes to write a check and join, you know. But what the difference was that all my life I had joined as a lifetime member to many, many gyms and never used it. So I got on my knees, I remember, and made a commitment to God, the same firm commitment that I made to abstinence, that I would go to that gym 4 days a week no matter what, even just if I showed up and took a jacuzzi or a sauna or whatever, but I would show up no matter what. And I practiced the principles that I learned in the program of humility, and patience and faith instead of pride and fear and impatience by going in there and not exactly telling them what I needed. So I went in and I said, look, I just lost a huge amount of weight a couple of years ago. I don't want to build up, I want to firm up. And I heard Nautilus machines are good for that. So they suggested what I do. They took me through, and talk about humility. I got on a life cycle. Now, I thought I was in great shape. I walked 3 to 5 miles a day for years, you know. And I got on, and this little gal was next to me, and she was, like, pumping away, you know, sweat dripping off. And she was, like, level 6 on the bike, right? And she had about 40 minutes in or something like that. So the guy put me on. He said, well, when's the last time you rode a bike? I said, 1918, you know. Right? Never. I wasn't a bike rider, you know, because I used to flatten the tires in the spokes. I really had those bad experiences where I got on friends' bikes and crushed the spokes of the bike. So that wasn't like, I wasn't too anxious to get on bicycles, you know. And so he said, well, let's start you easy at level 4 for 6 minutes. I lasted about a minute. And I, you know, you have to keep it up to like 80 on a machine. It was down to 60, and I was like suffering. And this girl next to me pissing me off, boy, something great. So I said to the guy, that's about what I said. So he said, oh, and he changed it to level 2. And I think I lasted 3 minutes, you know. And that was a lot of humility. And he said, just take it a day at a time, try to get it up to 6. He says, we'll start at level 1. When you get it to 6 minutes, you get it to level 2, etc. But I could just tell you, day at a time, practicing humility and patience and faith and all those things. And that's what I used to do, see. I used to get on a bike and I go, humility, patience, faith, humility. And once, I have to tell you, I was on... what the heck's his name? Richard Simmons show. Went on Richard Simmons show about 5 or 6 years ago, and we exercised together, and I was really in great shape, you know, and I was doing these sit-ups, and he was huffing and puffing, and he was getting, because, you know, he's supposed to be in good shape. He says, how do you stay in such good shape? So I told him about my gym experience. And he says, well, how do you motivate yourself, like, to get on that bike every day? And I go, I just say things like humility, patience, faith, you know. And I, you know, I get to say that. That's how I get to carry the message, you know. But anyway, that's what I do. And over the years, when I've had injuries and I don't want to go back, I remember I hurt my back. And at that time, I was doing, like, the advanced classes, you know, like with all the UCLA students, like Mr. Macho. And I had to go back and do nothing but low impact. And I didn't want to go back to the gym. And I prayed about it. And God said, let's run it down, Richie. What are we practicing here? Fear? Pride? You know, what happened to humility and faith? What happened to who cares what other people think? You know? And all that. So I went back to that low impact class and I would do faith, humility, patience, faith, you know. And that's what I, and nobody cares what you're saying, you know, but you're saying it. So I went in, and now I'm riding the life cycle, and I have to tell you honestly, within 5 or 6 months, and I used to do the Nautilus machines, and I would take a broomstick and just do, you know, trunk twists and stuff for this here, which someday will be gone, a day at a time. Someone said to me that for 45 years I've abused my body. And for 8 years, I've been taking care of it. So 37 more years, I have to be perfect. So a day at a time, I will have a flat stomach and no handles a day at a time. So now, after whatever period of time, 3 to 6 months of riding the life cycle, because of practicing patience, humility, and faith, I was doing an hour at level 5, okay? And I did it because I shared with other people where I was at, and they shared. And every time I rode that bike, I watched the aerobics class in front of me. And my head said, hey, what about no chance? No, you know, not a prayer that I could ever get out there and do those aerobics. And then God said, never say never. So I'll try to cut it short. I tried to do aerobics. The first aerobics class I did was an intermediate class, an hour class. And after 10 minutes, I wanted them to call the paramedics. I was like really in trouble. I thought I was going to die. And the instructor saw it. And she said, just don't stop. If you get tired, walk. She said, and don't compete with the rest of the class. Just compete with yourself. Magic words, folks. The most magic words anyone ever said to me. She said, tomorrow try to do 12 minutes. Well, whatever time span it was, I remember the first day I did the whole hour class. And I didn't do it perfectly, you know. Like when everyone was doing stomach work like this, I was doing, you know, but I was doing it. And I felt like Rocky when I finished that hour class, you know, dun 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 dun. And once I knew I could do it, I've been doing it ever since. And I've had injuries, I've had knee problems, I've had that, I've gone back to low impact. In fact, I've already found out I'm doing a class tomorrow at 9 o'clock. There's a gym on El Cielo in the airport plaza that has a 9 o'clock class, and I could just pay $10 and do the class. And now I'm back to intermediate, and sometimes I do both. I do low impact, I do intermediate. Once in a while I do a fat burner class, which is an hour and a half. You know, and the gift of the, you know, ability to do that is great. But all I could tell you is it gives me a spiritual, emotional, and physical lift every day. I don't do it to lose weight, to maintain weight. My motives are simply because I feel so fucking good when I do it. And a couple of years ago, they took a survey of the class, and they gave the results. And it asked why you did aerobics, et cetera, et cetera. And the age range was from 16 to 53. I was 53 at the time, you know. No, I was 52, something like that. Whatever it was, I was the oldest one in the class. And I could tell you that the friendships that I've gotten over the years, the healthy people that I surround myself with, is a gift. And it's just practicing the principles in all our affairs. If I practice faith and humility and patience, I'll do fine with exercise just like I would with anything else. And I went in there and I said, everybody, I said to my friend, I said, everybody's like looking, look at this guy, what is he doing in the gym, you know, Mr. Flabuno. And I remember my neck was down to here, my arms were down to here, and they said, patience, a day at a time, we do these little machines, you do it in a class like this here, and it'll firm up, and it firms up. I was with a woman, which was a miracle recently, and she grabbed my butt. And she said, I can't believe what a tight butt you got. And I said, a lot of hours of doing these things, you know what I mean? And that's what it is, you know, and it's patience, and it is. And I know I got great legs, and I, you know, and I'm working on the rest of it. And it's all a gift, you know, but it's something, it's the joy of living. It's part of the joy of living, you know. I don't do it because it's a chore. I do it because it's an absolute joy. So again, it's practicing the principles in all our affairs. And I know I got carried away, but I love talking about, you know, exercise. One more question. Were you thinking that if you lost weight, you wouldn't get the roles for the fat man, or that matter, wouldn't get any roles? Well, when I lost my weight, I remember I was about a year abstinence, and I was at a meeting at Beverly Hills. And I hardly worked at all, because they didn't know what to do with me anymore. And someone came up to me and said, how's your career going? And I said, what career? And they said, have you been working? I said, not at all, really. And they go, well, what are you going to do? What do you think? And I go, well, I think that it's only a career. And I'm going to live another 40, 50 years because of my health now. And whatever God got in store for me, I guess he's got in store. And they looked at me and they said, you really mean that, don't you? I said, yes, I mean. They go, you really don't care, do you? I go, of course I don't care. I said, it's, you know, big deal. If I don't act, I don't act. It's their loss, you know. And, you know, a month or so later, it turned around, and Mel Brooks used me. And my last movie I did before that was Fatso, which was for his, you know, his wife directed it and wrote it, but he also co-produced it. And he used me, he was the first one to use me thin in a film called History of the World. And he said, you lost a lot of weight, but you didn't lose your talent, you know. Unfortunately, a lot of people in Hollywood still think I have to be fat to do parts in certain shows. But again, that's their loss. And like I said earlier, my career is working for God, being a channel. How I earn my living happens to be as an actor right now. And it turned around, and the parts changed. You know, I went from doing quote-unquote heavies The last few roles I had was a newspaper editor, a priest, and a cop. You know, so go figure it out. I used to be a killer, a hitman, you know, a greasy garbage man, you know, you name it. So it's just that things have changed, but I never for one minute worried about it. And I get to be a channel in my work for that, because there's a lot of people who were a lot thinner than I was when they met me, and they're a lot fatter than I am today. And they ask me how it affects my career, and I said, I'm doing great, you know. And I had to let go of the fact that if I wasn't going to be fat, that I would never work again, because I don't care if I ever work again. It's the best job I ever had. They give me gas money, you know, all the love that I get from here. And, you know, who needs to work as an actor? I've got it right here. I've got all that I need to have. So I hope I answered those questions. And if you have any more, do them during lunch. I'd like to take just a few minutes before we break and get together in a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. Before we get in a circle, we'll do one more hug, okay? A three-person hug. So can I have two people up here to demonstrate? Okay. Now, you are, for those of you who weren't here earlier, we showed how to hug properly. So they will show you how, how two people will hug properly, and when one is taller, they bend their knees, right? So the new hug is, hold it right there, hold it. The new hug is a third person comes in, and it's called a sandwich. You make a sandwich out of the middle person. You get a turn. Come on, you get a turn. So these two hug. Go ahead, hug, and I make a sandwich. See? And then you change positions so everyone gets in the middle. So why don't everyone get a three-person hug?
Okay, what did I start with this morning? Hi, my name is Richie, and I'm a compulsive overeater. What we're going to, you mean start from the beginning or just from the end? Oh, so this morning stuff is okay. Okay. Well, Kenny told me that we left off with a three-person hug. That was the end of the tape before lunch. So in order to keep continuity, we'll start with a five-person hug, okay? So I need four volunteers to come on stage. Okay, three. Dennis always volunteers for hugs, okay. Okay, now this can be done with anywhere from like four to eight people, but five is like real comfortable. And you have to get in a circle. Arms around each other's waist. Circle. Okay. And on the count of three, you take one step in and squeeze. It's one, two, three. Good. Okay. Everybody give me a five-person hug. Okay, now, when we have a break later, after the break, we'll go to 10. And then more will be revealed by the end of the day. Okay, so now we have the good stuff already out of the way. And what I'll do is take it a minute at a time, but we'll try to remember to take a break somewhere around 3:30. Yeah, that would make sense. So I spoke about the first three steps and the principles of honesty, hope, and faith. So now I'm going to talk about steps 4 through 9, I guess, or 7 or something like that, whatever comes out. But I'll start with steps 4 and 5. Steps 4 and 5, the principles behind those steps are courage. It takes a lot of courage to write a searching and fearless moral inventory and to admit to God, to ourselves, and especially to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. So the principle behind that is courage. And what happens is, eventually, you know, in the 12th step, it says we need to practice these principles in all our affairs. And the principles I've learned are the principles attached to the steps. And it makes a lot of sense that in order to work the steps, they have to practice the principles of honesty, hope, faith, courage. And in order to live the way God wants me to live on a daily basis, I have to practice the principles of honesty, hope, faith, courage, among all the others that I'll get to eventually today. So my basis for living and my definition of God's will for me is to live the way God wants me to live. When I got here, my life was based on fear, pride, dishonesty, irresponsibility, and all those things. So I found out that I was lacking the spiritual actions, which was honesty, hope, faith, and courage. And when I live that way, I'm free, see? And when I live that way, I'm being loyal to God. When I go back to my old behavior, I'm being disloyal to God. I cannot afford to be disloyal to God, because being loyal to God has given me the freedom and the joy of living. You know, like I said, we insist that we enjoy life. God insists that I enjoy life. Every day, I ask myself, what did I do for fun today? Well, so far, I had a lot of fun today, you know, and I'm still having fun. Everything in my life is a joy. Even though it may seem like a chore or a difficulty to other people, it's a joy for me, because one of the other lessons I learned is that difficulties test my strength and faith and build my character. And there's not a difficulty. Well, this week my difficulties were, I met my daughter's new boyfriend. I forgot to mention that before. And my youngest daughter said to me, have you met Rod yet? And I said, no, have you? She said, no, but he can't be worse than Tony, right? I mean, Tony never worked a day. He worked a couple of days as a security guard in an auto place. But, and he was physically and emotionally and mentally abusive to my daughter. He was not responsible. He wasn't there for the baby or any of that stuff, you know. So what could be worse? And I found out her ex-boyfriend just got out of jail for drug dealing, you know. So it's none of my business. But these are the kind of difficulties that seem to be difficulties to other people. But what they are for me is a test of my strength and faith. And it's like, if I believe that God is, you know, the first thing that my sponsor ever told me, he said, there's only two things you have to know about God. He is and you ain't. So it's at these times when my daughter brings this new boyfriend and I start to know what's best for her is when I'm playing God again. So I zero in, I ain't, he is, I ain't, right? And if I have that underlying faith that nothing happens in this world by mistake, then I have to know that God has brought this guy into all of our lives for a reason. See? And all I could tell you is every time I get through these difficulties, and my only difficulties are living in doubt and anxiety and fear. Otherwise, I have no difficulties, you know? If I live in hope and faith, you know, and light, then I don't have any difficulties. It's when I doubt, is this good for my daughter, you know? Then I'm living in that doubt. I go, of course it's good. God knows better than me why he's in her life, you know. And to live it, you see, to live it and to just trust it and let it go. You know, letting it go to me is just knowing that God is, everything is in divine order. So it always builds my character, because like the story I was telling about the Laker game and leaving and my nephew baffled by how I could walk out of there serene. See, actually, what I wanted to do was put my fist into everybody's face in that room, starting with the pit bull dog and working my way up to humans, you know what I mean, by age group or whatever. But somehow what I did was hugged and kissed my daughter, said goodbye to her boyfriend, petted the dog, and got out of there. And then I go, who the hell was that? It wasn't me. And God says, no, it was us. You know, it was us. It was our ability together to practice, you know, the faith, letting it go, and all that stuff. And my friend Peter, who I mentioned I'm going to do this men's retreat with, Peter says that, you know, and the book says, and I've read it over and over, that we judge ourselves on our motives while the world judges ourselves on our actions. You know, I was full of good intentions when I got here. I never intended to be fat. I never intended to be stoned all the time. I never intended to be mean and angry and vindictive and critical and all those things. But I sure was. So people didn't know about my intentions. They just knew I was like a tough guy to be around, you know. And today, the same thing. My daughter doesn't know I want to punch her teeth out every time I see her. because I treat her in a loving way, because I really have the ability to love her unconditionally. And, you know, it's so funny how, I just want to say one thing. Don't let this podium separate us from the fact that I'm just another compulsive overeater recovering a day at a time through the grace of God and through the love of the people in these rooms and the fellowship. I mean, I'm nothing special. I'm just a byproduct of God's handiwork. And a lot of people use the podium and the stage to separate themselves from me and make me something different than what I am, which is, a low-bottom compulsive overeater who used to eat out of garbage cans just like everybody else. And so anyway, I don't know. Peter, so we were talking about intentions and stuff. And I have no idea what I'm talking about. I lost my whole train of thought, so I'll just go back to step four. It's safe, you know what I mean? So anyway, when I got to step four, I may think of it later. Sometimes I have total recall. Okay. So now I was at the point where I knew that I had to clear away these things that were blocking me from God. And in step three, it talks about it's not the quantity of faith, but the quality, and that we need to clean house, et cetera, et cetera. And step four, to me, searching and fearless moral inventory, I always thought about as fearful, you know. But it doesn't say that. It says fearless. And the thing that really helped me is in step four, going to those step study meetings and studying the steps. I don't know if you have any out here, but we have a great format for a step study meeting. If you don't have it here, you should consider it. You go to the meeting, you read the step. Everybody goes around the room, reads a paragraph or two if it's real short. At the end of reading that step, we take 20 minutes to write about how we relate to what we just read. And the rest of the meeting, everyone shares their writing. And it's a really wonderful experience. So when I did this with step four, what came to me was that it said that looking at our character defects and taking an inventory was the first step towards unblocking the things that were blocking us from the light of God, you know, from that ability for God to reach us and work through us. So I was having trouble with the God concept anyway, but again, it told me that all I had to do was quit arguing and work the rest of the steps, and it will infiltrate my life. So I was willing enough to do that. And then it said in step four, it said that only by looking at the character defects, or as it says in there, our natural instincts that have gone astray. Sometimes they word it real nice in the book. It says, then and only then can we know what we can do to move toward correcting them. So what happened for me was by writing the inventory, listing my character defects, then I knew what my spiritual shortcomings were. See, I found out, I know what I was going to say about the podium separating us. Right, I know. I knew I'd get recall on that. No, I forgot again. Okay. I'm not playing with your head or anything. I'm just like well charged up here. You know what I mean? So it's just by look. Oh, that's right. My design for living when I got here was the seven deadly sins. That's the only way I knew how to live, you know. Pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, and sloth. That was my way of living. That was my design for living. And I found out through doing an inventory, see, it all ties in through doing an inventory that if I could look at and admit that I was practicing these defects of character, then people who were there before me taught me what I could do instead, which gives me a whole new design for living, which is based on the principles of this program, see. And one of the biggies for me was learning that. So now I get to practice and practice and practice and practice these new principles. And it's not easy when you're brought up with people telling you, get them before they get you. The only thing that's going to get you by in this world is power, prestige, and romance, and all those kind of things, see? So the greed was naturally there. The gluttony was naturally there. The pride of being the best of everything was there, you know? And justifiable anger was always there. I mean, I'm a victim. I'm a total victim, you know? And I found out that all of that was bullshit. See, all of that was like misinformation. So, again, getting back to the podium, it's so funny how people look at me and visualize me in this program, because I shared once that we have these beach meetings in Santa Monica, and it's great to see these OA women in bikinis and stuff, you know, and wanting to jump on all their bones. And I said to somebody, I said, I'd love to go to beach meeting and just think how lustfully I would like to, like, go in the water with everybody, you know, skinny dip. And then they go, that's lust, Richie. I go, no, that's lustful thinking. If I acted on it, that's lust. But I don't act on it. I mean, I'm never going to not think prideful, not think angry, not think lustful, not think greedy, not think gluttonous. But what I do about it is what's important. And it's the action. So again, it's back to people judge me on my actions. So what happened to me, just as an example, instead of living by those seven deadly sins, I found out that the opposite of pride is humility. See? So I can't be prideful and humble at the same time. So if I'm practicing, I recognize, you know, like what I was talking about earlier about the gym. If you weren't here, you'll have to buy the tape to know what I'm talking about. But anyway, I was talking about going in there and letting pride block me from doing what I had to do, which was to humbly admit that this little girl next to me could do 60 minutes at level 6 and I could do 2 minutes at level 3. You know what I mean? And to just trust that patience and faith would carry me through. So the opposite of anger is love and forgiveness. There's no way for me to be angry when I'm loving and forgiving. And, you know, anger comes up in my life. I mean, when someone cuts me off on a freeway, I still get angry. Until I remember that there's something called love and forgiveness, and I go, well, I guess they're in a bigger hurry than me. And as one of my friends once said, nobody ever yelled at me for being one car length late. You know? And that's what I think of all the time. If somebody wants to come in out of a driveway or cut out across from another lane, the first thing I think of is, no one's going to yell at me for being one car length late, you know? But why do I have to prove something by not letting him in? And that was my old behavior. And it's simple little things like that that make me feel so good about myself. But I never would have known any of that if I wasn't willing to write an inventory. Now, how I got there was I had done the first three steps, and by now I realized that I had to do more. That I had to do more than just abstain, go to meetings, and read a couple of things in the book, and go to step study meetings. And again, in step three, it says, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God, meant that we had to take the action of work in the remaining steps. That's the only way that I interpret this book as saying that's a surrender to God, it's a surrender to the program. So I made that surrender. But I balked. I was still using sloth as one of my main defects of character, which is procrastination, you know, in short form. And I decided to ask 30 or 40 people how to write an inventory. So I got 30 or 40 answers, which still none of them were conducive to my mentality. So I was going to wait till I got the perfect one to write. And then I went to a meeting, and one of those coincidences happened where Chuck C., may he rest in peace, was speaking. And guess what? I think it was Chuck or it was Clancy, one of the two. And they were talking about, guess what, writing an inventory. And they were talking about how we all procrastinate and ask everybody how to do it, and we get different answers. And I go, isn't that strange that this has happened to me? He said, so there are only three things that are very instrumental in writing an inventory. You get a pencil, you get a paper, and you get honest. And I go, there they are with that simple shit again. You know what I mean? And then it reminded me again of my first sponsor, God bless him, who had this way of, you know, verbalizing things to me that would get through. Like he would say, it's the intellectuals that have problems with the program. Us assholes got it made. You know what I mean? And that's what it is. You know, the simpler I keep it and the dumber I get and the more I surrender, the easier my life gets. See? So here I was. They were simplifying it for me, but I was still scared. And this guy said, whether it was Clancy or Chuck C., they're both, you know, gifts from God. He said, if you're having trouble with any of the steps of the program, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, you got to do them in order. And if you've done them in order and you're having trouble, back up one and make sure that you have taken one before and you won't have trouble taking this one. So I said, did I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? I said, I guess I did, but then again, if I did, then I'm going to write the inventory. And what he said next was, he said, so if you made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand him, let God write the inventory for you. Again, too simple for me, right? So I said, there's no getting around it. I have to start. So I called my sponsor and I said, what do I do? And he said, do you think that you could spend 15 minutes a day to recover in order to get well? And I said, sure, 15 is a breeze. He said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take 15 minutes a day, prime time. That means for compulsive overeaters after a meal. Doesn't, you know, that's prime time. We're serene, we're relaxed, you know, and we're fulfilled. I said, that makes a lot of sense to me. So I decided that after dinner, I was going to, that's when I had the big house with the pool and jacuzzi, I was going to sit by the pool or in the jacuzzi and write for 15 minutes minimum. And I started to write, and the way I did my first one was chronologically, that I went back in my life to the very first time I could think of when I used food to overcome an emotion. And I remembered when I was in preschool, in kindergarten, actually, that I stole food, that I had a fight and I got punished, and I went into the closet and everyone had their brown bags in there, and I went in to get my coat and I ate while I was in the closet. And ate out of course, everyone else's lunch but my own, you know. And then I came out and everyone says, what were you? I said, I couldn't find my coat. You know what I mean? And that was the first thing I remember. So that's how I wrote the inventory. And I remember at the beginning I would write, and I would think I was writing forever. I'd look up and it would be 9 minutes. I've been only writing 9 minutes. This is ridiculous. Like, I'll never make another 6 minutes. Maybe I need to put music on it from, you know. And I did that for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden, one night, the floodgates opened. I hit on something that triggered so many things that I wrote till like 3 o'clock in the morning, and only out of pure exhaustion did I stop. And then I remembered reading in step 4 or 5, where it says, as we're writing this inventory, all of a sudden we will realize the freedom that comes from it, and it will open a whole new door for us. And the freedom of admitting all these things and bringing them out is a gift, you know, that you'll never forget. And that's exactly how I felt. Now, not only was I doing the inventory because I knew I had to do it, I was doing it because I wanted to do it. I wanted to find out more. I wanted to take that step. I wanted to grow, you know. And that's how I've approached this program. I often use the analogy that I approach this program like a prize fighter. You know, like Mike Tyson's fighting Leon Spinks, right? Now, both of them go in there, and they know that winning that fight means a lot, recognition, money, a lot of things. And they also both know that in order to do that, they're going to take a lot of punishment. They're going to take pain. They're going to take discomfort. But that light at the end of the tunnel is winning the world's undisputed heavyweight championship. Well, that's how I approached the 12 steps. I knew there would be pain, I knew there would be discomfort, I knew there would be like strange feelings, but I also knew that all you people that had that look in your eyes like, hey, my house burned down, but hey, it's not the end of the world, it's a house. That's what I wanted, and they told me I could get that if I just worked these steps and let it happen, do the process. So that's the energy that I had to do it. It wasn't because I was afraid anymore or because I had to do it. It's the same thing as, you know, giving it away. It says in working with others, it says at first we carried a message to others because we said if we want to keep what we got, we have to give it away, and we do it out of knowing we have to do it. And then as we're doing it and the joy from doing it comes, it transcends the reason into being because it's the pure joy of doing it and the pure joy of living. And that's what ended up in my inventory. It was a joy to do it. I went, oh, wait till he hears about this one. You know what I mean? It was like I was so excited that those deep, dark secrets that I was going to take to the grave. And I just have to tell you another few things I learned about my experiences with step 4 and 5. My sponsor told me to read the big book and step 5 to make sure, before I gave it away that I wanted to give it away to him, and he let me know that what it says in there, you can give it to a stranger, a clergyman, a friend, a sponsor, whoever you want to give it to. And he says, if you don't, he said, before you do it, if you don't say who you're going to give it to, you're not going to edit it. He says, if you think you're going to give it to me, and there's something in there that you may think I'm going to judge you on, he said, you'll leave it out. He said, but if you just know that you don't have to give it all to me, he said, then you just let it pour out. So I got, this is true, so I was writing this chronological thing, and now I was into being Ernest Hemingway. You know, everyone has an opinion. Someone says if you write more than a postage stamp can cover, it's too much. And if you, you know, write five notebooks full, it's not enough. It's, you know, so I just had to try to be honest. So I had been writing this for about 3 months, and I had like really a thick book. I wanted it to be the biggest and best ever, you know what I mean? And I'm writing and writing, and I'm calling my sponsor on a daily basis about my progress and how my food is and how my emotions are and all that stuff. And I got to age 13 and a half in three months. I called